Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
To the house! Touchdown!
This is unbelievable.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Danny Cannell, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, and Tom Fornelli. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. Week 13, not quite in the books. We've got a Hawaii-Nevada game going on out on the Big Island with an 11 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff. We are here just before midnight on the East Coast with a bevy of topics to get into, not only from Saturday, but also from Friday and the college football weekend as a whole. It's so funny. I was trying to put together all my show notes, and, you know, I was looking at all the excellence that we had seen. You know, we saw 5 touchdowns from Mac Jones. We saw 400 yards passing from Trevor Lawrence. Kyle Pitts had 3 touchdown grabs on 5 receptions, and I want to talk about Michigan.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Of all things to say, I didn't expect that to be said.
Yeah, I think because, and I want to talk about Michigan because I was one of the last ones to hold out. I was fighting this fight of like, you guys don't understand how inside at Michigan they love Jim Harbaugh. And you guys don't understand that, you know, as long as Jim Harbaugh is hitting graduation rates, as long as he's running a scandal-free program, that, you know what, like, they're going to hold on to him a lot longer than anybody else who on the outside is going to look at that 0-5 record against Ohio State and be like, well, you should get him gone. But, I mean, today was it. It's at home. It's to a Penn State team that had 0 wins going into it. If there's no turning back now.
Really? But I don't, like, Penn State's better than Michigan. I was saying that on the pod this week. That's why I took Penn State. I think that's why 3 of us took Penn State as a money line sprinkle. We expected this to happen.
But you don't think that on its face value, you think that the Jim Harbaugh could be coaching Michigan in 2021?
I don't think today changed that equation at all.
Ooh.
I mean, is losing to an 0-5 Penn State worse than needing 3 overtimes to beat Rutgers?
Yes, because it's at home and because it is the game.
There's nobody at home. The stadium's empty.
The visibility, like there's a little bit something more to losing in the noon slate on ABC than there is to losing on the Big Ten Network at 11 p.m.
I mean,
Michigan,
I guess.
Michigan men and women respect bedtimes, and I don't know how many of them stayed up for all those overtimes with Rutgers. I'm pretty sure that ran into a recording of this podcast.
I don't know. Barton, what do you think? Do you think this is like do you think anything changes because of this?
No, because I think that this is a Penn State team that's snake bit to be 0-5. It's not some horrible team. And so I just think this is the season that we're in, and records look weird. And I'm not saying that Jim Harbaugh is like all Gucci, but like this doesn't change anything for me. This was two teams. Someone had to get a win. I mean, if Michigan had beaten Penn State and Penn State goes to 0-6, I'm not suddenly saying James Franklin's going to get fired either. Now that said, I think that if we don't see Jim Harbaugh at Michigan next year, that wouldn't shock me. I think it wouldn't be him getting fired. It would be him sort of exiting and taking another job somehow. I still don't think that's going to happen. But this was another, not a great look.
Well, no, listen, I'm glad y'all are still on that ship that I used to be on. I'm just letting you know that I'm jumping off, that I just, I think that.
So you think this was like, okay, you now think you need this to be fired?
I don't think that this was it, but I do think that this was, I think this was a winnable game. And I think they looked bad. Like they looked like an awful football team.
I agree that they looked bad. It's just, I don't remember them looking good outside of that Minnesota game. And if we went back and we watched that in retrospect, knowing what we know about Minnesota that we didn't know then, I don't know how good Michigan would have looked in that win. To me, he could be gone. It's the same situation we've talked every week. He's not going to get fired during the season. I don't think he's going to get fired after the season.
No. And that's not what I'm about. It's definitely more in the big picture. What were we planning on this offseason? I don't know. I had no expectations. We're in a pandemic. It's a weird season. What do I think right now at 11:26 on Saturday the 28th? I think that Michigan, Texas are going to be open, and that means we're in for a wild, wild coaching carousel. People were talking about how it's like, well, you know, with the pandemic, don't expect much. Like, if Michigan and Texas are open, no holds bar. That's it. Like, it's just game on across the country.
Well, here's something I want to present to you guys on, because when I was watching this game, it was like a conversation that Dave Pasch and Mike Golic were having while calling the game. First of all, Barton, you'll be happy to know that Mike Golic kept saying that if Jim is going to be back, Michigan needs to extend him because you can't be a lame duck recruiting. So I'm sure you'll be thrilled to hear that. But the other part was they were talking about the Michigan job, and they were saying, you know, how, you know, Rich Rod wasn't a Michigan guy. He didn't fix it. Brady Hoke was kind of a Michigan guy. He did better than Rich Rod, but he didn't fix it. And then Jim Harbaugh is the prototypical Michigan guy, and he's done well, but he hasn't done well enough. And then Dave Pasch, you know, they were talking about like, okay, well, who can you get to? Who's like a replacement for Jim Harbaugh that's going to be the guy that fixes this program? And Dave Pasch asked a question that I was kind of taken aback by, and I just want to know what your guys' reaction to it is. He says, well, who knows how attractive a job Michigan is to these coaches?
I think it's still a pretty attractive job.
So do I. I just wanted to make sure, because when he said, I was like, I think Michigan's still a very attractive job. It's Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I mean, they're, you know, Ohio State's a better job. Texas is probably a better job. And, there are the handful of jobs that are better jobs.
And but Texas might be a better job, but I don't know if I'd want Texas over Michigan. Yeah, right. And you know what? That's part of the decision here, right? Isn't it a lot of like the flavor and the fit and the culture and the personal style?
Yeah, I think for me, if I'm a coach, I think Michigan's a better fit for me than Texas would be. But that's just because there's too many cooks in the kitchen in Austin.
Yeah, you could probably make a case that Michigan's a better job than Texas, just given the simple fact that Jim Harbaugh hadn't fired yet. Like, I will say this though, to address the coaching extension thing, I laugh about how unnecessary it is to extend coaching contracts due to quote recruiting, and yet it would be pretty interesting if they don't extend his contract after this year and he's literally in his last year of the deal. That might impact recruiting. I don't know what you do in that situation. So Michigan, regardless, is in a little bit of a tricky spot here at the end of the season.
Okay. So sorry to take y'all down my little, like, it was maybe already arming myself for the emergency podcast and the emergency HQ hits that are going to come with Michigan and Texas being open during the holiday season, you know, just trying to make myself ever ready.
Do you think that Texas is done, or Herman's done this week, or is he going to finish the season?
I think he finishes the season, but there might be the last game is Kansas.
Who do they have between then?
Kansas State
next, and they have Kansas, and that's it.
I don't think it's a good idea to send that team into the Kansas State game in Manhattan without its head coach, even if it is a head coach that's probably going to be fired. What do you think?
He was so close to getting through this thing.
I know.
I mean, because he's not going to lose to Kansas, obviously. And Kansas, I feel like Texas is, in its current state a better team than Kansas State. Now, first half of the season, I'm not sure I would have necessarily even said that. But right now, I think they're going to beat Kansas State. And so he almost made it out alive. Now, I guess technically he still might make it out alive. But the narrative that we've heard, or that's been sort of buzzing around the message boards and the Texas insiders, is that he had to win out after those first two losses. And he hadn't won out. He just lost Iowa State. And I thought it was interesting. And I want to mention this on the podcast, because I did mention it when we did an HQ hit together about Iowa State and Texas. And I had a Big 12 staffer tell me that he said that, surprising, like Texas doesn't look that impressive physically. He's like, they're unimpressive. They're underwhelming physically. Which is obviously is an indictment on their development, because they recruit freaks, right? And he said, on the flip side, and this he told me this like 2 weeks ago, so this is had nothing to do with the matchup this weekend, but just he said, on the flip side, Iowa State looks like an NFL team. And so that to me is a really strong representation of just sort of what the problem is here. It's just, it's not recruiting, or it's not like whatever, like quarterback play or coaching. It's development. And the development is lacking at Texas, and it's not lacking at Iowa State. And Matt Campbell gets the most out of his roster. He gets the most out of his roster at Toledo. He gets the most out of his roster at Iowa State. What was the Breece Hall quote? Five-star culture, just be five-star talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, like, when a job like Michigan comes open, like Matt Campbell is a great candidate for that. And for any of these other big jobs that fit him, that will allow him to build his culture and his roster the way he wants to. Because that's why Iowa State's really good.
I do think that I'm allowed to blame, and I know that it is indirectly a blame, but it still's got to fall at somebody's feet. Texas is dead last in the Big 12 in penalty yards per game. And doesn't it just seem like anecdotally, when you think about watching Texas, they're just not sharp. I mean, just not really a particularly sharp team. They tried to execute that fake. It was the fake, and then it was coming up short on the 4th-and-1. Like, all of a sudden, a 10-point lead is gone, and then you've lost the game. I mean, it was all that doesn't necessarily fall on the head coach's table, but I can put that on the coaching. It has not been a particularly sharp team for the last 2 years.
That's fair. Absolutely. And there was some, I'm sort of, it's hazy now. I feel like this happened a week and a half ago.
It was Friday.
but there was some pretty like questionable clock management, and there were some issues late in the game there that
Sam Ehlinger took a sack that if he doesn't take, I think that Cameron Dicker can make that field goal.
Yeah.
It ends up being maybe like 5 or 6 yards further back.
Don't you dare use Sam Ehlinger's name in vain in this situation. Sam Ehlinger, Senior Day Sam nearly pulled this thing out.
I know.
See, I was sitting there holding my Iowa State ticket thinking, what did I do betting against Senior Day Sam? And he did the whole deal. He did the whole routine. You know, I'm going to run for yards and take hits and play hurt and gut it out. And it looked like he was just going to do it again at that final drive. And then he took that sack.
I disagree. The body language on the sideline before that final drive was bad.
Oh, really?
Nobody was up. I didn't see a lot of people around him. I didn't see everybody coming up. I didn't see him like bobbing his head, like going up and down to the offensive line, dapping everybody up.
Senior Day Sam's a beaten man.
Senior Day Sam's been through a lot.
Did you see the quote from him after the game?
Which one? There were several interesting ones, including where he's like, I guess this whole game was like 2020, man. Like,
no, the one where they asked, like, they asked him, like, do you think this is whatever? Is this on the coaching? You know, what's the problem here? And he just said, that's
the million dollar question.
That's the million dollar question we've been trying to figure out for 10 years. And I was like, whoo, Sam's, it's like, okay, well, Sam's clearly done.
I will say, Chip, hearing you say that is funny to think, because like that is a stark contrast to the beginning of his career. Do y'all remember like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed Sam in that like USC game when he first became iconic? And obviously different environment and the crowd's going crazy and mom's in the stand and mom is like, she's not doing any of like the nervous mom, like holding her eyes, like covering her eyes stuff. She's like dancing and like just so loose. Like you can totally see where he gets the moxie from. And then here you are just over the last, 4 years, he's just been beaten up and beaten up. And his senior day Sam moment arrives and he's just like, doesn't have anything left in the tank. That's kind of that's quite the microcosm.
It's like when they show you the picture of the president on his first day in office compared to his last day in office. Right. It looks like he's aged 20 years every single time.
He's spaced out. He's become a nihilist. He's really questioning a lot of things right now by the end of it. No, I had the shout out to the film room, as always. I had his senior day Sam video teed up and ready to go for when that final drive was going to end up in a touchdown, but stayed in drafts. Delete. okay, well, sorry to take y'all to Michigan and Texas right off the jump. Were y'all really excited to talk about the excellence of an Alabama or a Clemson or Notre Dame from Friday? What's up? What's burning on y'all's minds tonight?
I mean, I think the bigger win was Notre Dame, because I feel like North Carolina was the last real hurdle for them between now and the ACC championship. But I think the more impressive win was Alabama, because even though like they were supposed to beat Auburn, it's just, you know, Nick Saban's not coaching. He can't be there. And they just still go out and completely annihilate their rival. And it's like I tweeted it. Barton's mentioned it on the show last week, where he feels like, you know, you said that they're like a tier above everyone else. And I think when I was watching today's game, that was really, it just kind of struck me. It's like, my God, they're back to death machine days, because now the offense is completely unstoppable. And the defense on the other side isn't giving up anything. Like we remember earlier this year where that was problematic. They were giving up yards, that the Ole Miss game, the first half against Georgia. And even last year where like there were problems in the secondary defensively, they were getting torn up. Now, obviously they haven't played an elite offense in a few weeks, but still they are just in killer, destroy, crush, kill, destroy everything that gets in their way mode. And it's like, you're watching it and like Clemson showed a little bit of that again today, which was nice to see, but still just watching Alabama right now compared to watching everybody else in the country, I'm just like, I don't see anybody beating them. And today was just like another kind of reminder of that.
The dudes are incredible. I mean, it's just like, I mean, Barton, you're shaking your head right now. For those who can watch on youtube.com/cover3 or in the CBS Sports app on the OTT device. I mean, from the time that we share here on the Cover 3 podcast and talking about football in the group chat, little bit aware of when, like, you know, Will Anderson's in there all of a sudden, like making plays. Obviously Malachi Moore already has a couple picks on the season. He showed out in a couple of SEC on CBS games, but it's just up and down this depth chart on the defensive side. Like we don't have a Quinnen Williams that we have designated as like the true superstar that we all gravitate towards. Dylan Moses is probably the most important in terms of like what he means to that whole group. But the defense is just dudes, and the dudes are just playing so well right now.
Yeah, and I think that in a lot of some of the flashier plays on the Alabama defense right now are showing up out of the freshman class.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible.
Will Anderson, Tim Smith, Malachi Moore, Brian Branch, like these guys are making a ton of plays right now. And so I think that was a really timely comment you made, Tom, about it feels like the Death Star is back, or the death machine is fully operational, whatever it was, because it does. And it's the defense is sort of why, like, we're not, the offense is the given at Alabama. All of a sudden it used to be the other way around. Now the offense is the given, and now, okay, the defense you know, that first half, I think they ended up giving up like 4.5 yards a play. The first half, they were giving up like 3.7. And I do think it's when you contrast, like Kirk Herbstreit, I'll go back to the North Carolina Notre Dame game. So after that game, I was like, man, that was the really impressive win by Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a complete effort. Man, that defense got after their ass. Like
78 yards in the second half. North Carolina's offense averages 550, and they were held to 78 after halftime. Total domination by that defense.
And there's a lot of accolades that we need to throw it at that game. But, you know, as Kirk Herbstreit even tweeted after the game, like, this team should be the number one team in the country. And I get the emotion of, like, seeing that performance and thinking, you know what, complete team. Offense, defense, special teams, discipline, yada, yada, number one team in the country. But it's sort of a ridiculous even think about it. Like, it's Alabama. Like, they're clearly the number one team in the country. And then against Auburn, they showed it, because those are similarly ranked teams. I mean, they're different challenges because they're very different teams, but they're similarly ranked teams. And Alabama just absolutely stomped on Auburn's throat from the first snap to the last. And I'm sitting here thinking about now, maybe Clemson, I don't know. Can they get this thing clicking? Can they get angry?
Wide receivers were looking good. I'm all the way in on your boat of, like, this might be a wide receiver off. Like, how do you win the college football playoff? You just have more better wide receivers. EJ Williams had his first career start today. Balled. Like, a JoJo is starting to get out there. And somebody had a funny comment. He said the defensive back who lined up on the opposite side sort of held his hands out like, what do I do with this human being right here? Like, this is not what I'm supposed to be guarding right now. Clemson might. But even then, it's not proven. Like, Cornell Powell's had a great moment. And, like, Ohio State, you could say, you know, Garrett Wilson, Olave, but...
But let's be real. Like, let's not carry our preseason expectations for Ohio State into what they've shown us this year.
Then it's just Clemson.
They have not shown us that they're anywhere close to Alabama right now. They really haven't. I mean, if we're just being honest, we thought they were, and we kind of painted them into that box. But they're not. Like, maybe they prove it. Maybe they change our minds, but they're not right now. It's Alabama and everyone else, and maybe Clemson if Trevor Lawrence can get rolling.
Plus, we all know Illinois would have beaten Ohio State if they played the game today.
They didn't want that smoke.
They were scared.
So is Ohio State just, like, not going to play for – or Ohio State and Wisconsin going to play each other on the Big Ten championship weekend in a game that is more of a college football playoff play-in game than the actual Big Ten championship game?
Northwestern Indiana playing in the Big Ten championship
yes.
game. And then the side court, it's going to be Ohio State playing Wisconsin.
I mean, we're not far from that, right?
Yeah. No, it might very well be it.
Oh. I mean, I jokingly said on Twitter after Northwestern lost to Michigan State, and it was a joke, but there was also very much a hint of truth to it. I said Northwestern fans should just be happy because at least now you get this out of the way, so that way you won't be angry later when you're an undefeated Big Ten champion and the college football playoff selects a 4-0 Ohio State over you.
Well, I mean, I said that at least it wasn't to a division foe, you know? Northwestern took this dumb loss, and they're still going to end up winning the Big Ten West. Hang a banner.
I don't know. If you can lose to Michigan State, you can. Oh, well, actually, you know what? Northwestern is going to win the West because their game next week against Minnesota will probably be canceled, which means that they, you know, even if they lose to Illinois, Wisconsin's probably not going to have enough games. So, yeah, no, they'll probably win it on default just next week when that game's canceled.
The way I was looking at it is I think that both Minnesota and Illinois are too far back in the head-to-head tiebreakers that they have against Iowa and Wisconsin. I guess Wisconsin's also got its own issues, but they're close to getting it wrapped up.
Side note, I got so mad today when Rutgers beat Purdue because it just confirmed my theory that had Illinois had Brandon Peters or Isaiah Williams for that Purdue game, they win that game and they're 3-2 right now. And had they had him for the Minnesota game, they might be 4-1.
Who is the National Coach of the Year right now, in y'all's opinion?
Is this a Pat Fitzgerald? Is that where you're leading me?
No, I'm thinking, like, is it Greg Schiano?
Oh.
I think you could make a really good logical argument that it should be, because they have won two games and they have looked competent in their losses. So when you compare that, their performances this year to what we've seen from Rutgers in recent years during the Chris Ash era.
Do you guys remember when I tried to punk y'all and make you look stupid by reading off all their margins of defeat last mm-hmm. year
yeah.
for their schedule? That was just like a stupid, stupid season.
Yeah. I don't think he can win it with like a 2-6 record. I don't think there's enough people who do it. But if you wanted to make the argument that no team has been improved as much this year, then Greg Schiano has improved that Rutgers program in one offseason, in one really messed up offseason. And yeah, he should probably get at least a few votes.
I think you've got to give it to the first coach to get to 12 games played. So it's Jake Spavital for the 2-10 Texas State Bobcats.
Got there, though.
Because they That's got 12 games off.
Now Jeff Hafley should get some, too. Yeah. They haven't had a single positive test.
Zero COVID positives. Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. All right, coming up on the other side, we start to take a look around the rest of the country, the highlights that stood out, the players that need to be celebrated, and much more next.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Okay. Do you want to go back to that Notre Dame North Carolina game, Barton?
Yeah, we can go back to that.
How'd you feel about it?
So I tweeted this out. I thought this was very representative of just how impressive this defense is and has been under Clark Lee. So they first quarter, y'all remember it, because I think you may, y'all, I don't even know if y'all are playing the total, but we were talking in the text thread about the total a little bit. And, you know, they scored a bunch of points. Notre Dame gave up like 145 yards in the first quarter. All right. Second quarter, the defense gave up like 78. Halftime comes. They've settled in. Third quarter, they give up 45, I think. And then fourth quarter, they give up like 37. So, and by the end of the game, you just had zero confidence North Carolina could figure out a way to score.
No.
And it's just, I mean, they're just so good, A, at making adjustments on the fly. They're so good at the linebacker position. They're so good on the defensive front. They played most of that game without Kyle Hamilton, who got kicked out with a
targeting call in the second quarter.
They're just so fun to watch.
They held Travis Etienne to 28 yards rushing. I mean, you go and you look at how they've played against the best running backs on their schedule, and Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, the 1-2 punch, is right up there with them. Some of the best rushing attacks you're going to face. And they just stuffed it out. It was incredible.
And Ian Book keeps on playing good ball. And so I don't know if I don't know if how confident I am that they can get in there and run with an Alabama. I don't even really know that I'm feeling very confident that they can beat Clemson in round two, but I am very confident that they're like, this is not some top four team that's just, oh, they figured out a way and cute little Notre Dame. Just like, this is a really, really good football team. And I'm anxious to see what it's going to do with the challenges that are ahead, because they'll have some sort of game plan. They'll have something ready for whoever they're playing, whether it's Clemson or Alabama or whoever. They'll put together something that's gives them a pretty good shot.
And I feel like as long as they can avoid the four seed, I think they have a realistic chance of winning whoever they face in the semi if they get to the playoff. But at the same time, if they do get that four seed and they do have to play Alabama, I mean, I know this is kind of like, you know, a consolation prize, but I think they'd cover.
You know? What do you think that line would be?
I would guess
16, 17, something like that.
I feel like Alabama is going to be a huge favorite over anybody it plays, but I think they could keep that into the single digits no matter what the spread's at.
Give me, I would say 15 and a half.
Yeah, 16, 17 sounds high, but it's still, it is going to be a big number, whatever it is.
The longer layoff, I feel like never does. Notre Dame's great to catch you, you know, when you're not ready to just play some fundamental sound football for 60 minutes. When you can put together that perfect game plan, and you are Alabama, that of course is always an advantage.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about the Pac-12?
Bruh.
I
think Pac-12's out, by the way.
Yeah.
Just flat out, like, they're done. Like, they do not have a chance at making the playoffs.
I agree.
Yeah. I was going to say, I did find it kind of funny. Like, where I agree, I don't think there's a Pac-12 team that's getting to the playoff, but it's when Oregon lost on Friday night and everybody's like, well, there goes the conference's only hope. And I'm sitting there like, well, you know, Washington's still undefeated and USC is still undefeated and Colorado. But it's like, yeah, especially after the way Washington played tonight, where it got down 21-0 and it came back and won. Like, they're undefeated, but nothing about Washington to this point in the year is making you think, oh, yeah, that's a team that's going to run the table. That's a dominant football team. So, well, yeah.
And not only that, but if they do run the table, whatever it is, 6-0, I guess that's the best case scenario for them. A 6-0 Washington is not making the playoffs. No. I feel very confident in that. And I think of whatever, a 6-0 USC, same thing. 6-0 college, like, none of those teams have shown enough in their wins to make the playoffs with the limited slate of games that they're going to have the opportunity to play.
Two loss Big 12 champ gets in ahead.
Yep. I think so.
Yeah.
And that is fascinating given where we're at with an Iowa State Oklahoma rematch. And if you've got the Pac-12 knocked out, then you're just basically comparing your resume against a one loss, non-conference champ from the SEC potentially.
Especially if you look at the precedent that the committee's already kind of sent, or at least the hint in that, like, there's the only real reason you could say that Clemson deserved to be ranked number three ahead of Ohio State number four was that either A, the loss without Trevor Lawrence didn't count, or B, well, they've played more games, so we could forgive them for that loss, whereas Ohio State's only played, what, four games or whatever it is at that point. So, like, clearly, if a Pac-12 team is 6-0 and, like, Oklahoma's 9-2, they're going to say, well, the nine wins are greater than six, even with the two losses.
Right. It seems like when it comes to comparing some of the resumes among teams with similar losses, they really are just going to go by how many of those wins are good. Mm-hmm. And I will give you more points for those. You've got more dollars. Congratulations. You played more games. You've got more value. You're going to be ranked ahead of the teams that started later and don't have as many games. And I'll say that I don't know if I disagree with that.
I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to win a lot of games. It's hard to survive a lot of games. Hard to stay healthy for a lot of games.
It's a lot easier to lose when you have to play 10 games than only have to play six.
Yeah, we had, which is why Jake Spavital, the 2-10 Texas
State. That's why the fight and Spav should be in the top 25. It's not fair.
Okay. I'm pulling up. Did y'all see the sweatiness for NC State at Syracuse?
I saw
the fake spike.
I heard how it ended.
Yeah. Oh, Jarrett Patterson, Buffalo. You're wearing the Buffalo hat. We can't let this podcast pass without highlighting the nearly record-setting performance. 409 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns, 8 rushing touchdowns, ties the FBS record. 409 leaves him 18? Short? 427. Yeah, Samaje Perine. So, okay. Incredible moment as Jarrett Patterson, who, by the way, was just Ross Tucker mentioned this on the broadcast, but every single time he was on the sideline, he was on the exercise bike, right? I mean, he's just, the man ran for 409 yards, but then also spent like probably 3.5 miles on the Peloton on the side. And they took him out at the very end of the game when he was within the number of yards potentially of setting this new single game yardage record. And what happens? Backup running back runs for a touchdown. Into possession. Brutal.
I thought he tapped himself out. I thought I saw him go.
Do this one? Yeah. Like coach, like pull on the jersey. Like,
but after the game, Lance Leipold said that like he didn't realize that how close he was and that he, you know, wish he hadn't taken him out or whatever.
And I will say, like, I could forgive Leipold for not knowing because he's kind of busy coaching the game. But how does somebody on that staff back up and say, coach, he needs 20 yards to set the record, coach? I mean, somebody should have let him know.
Listen, I know that the locks are still very much up in the air as to who wins this year. The money line sprinkles up in the air as to who wins this year. I feel like I should get some sort of recognition for winning this year in terms of drafting our group of five teams. Now, I know that this is this might be a weekend where at least Tom can sort of like feel what it's like to have a good team that you're a fan of, but y'all could have picked any team in the damn country and you took USF and ECU. And I took a Buffalo team that just put up a 70 spots on Kent State to win. And they're going to go undefeated this year and they're going to win the MAC. And I just got to watch my running back nearly break the all-time rushing records. I mean, how dumb do you guys feel right now?
You know, some people, when they're playing NCAA football and they're starting a dynasty, some people start with Alabama. Some people want to start with Georgia State or UMass and build their way up. And, you know, I'm a Georgia State UMass guy. I want to be there for the journey. I don't want to just jump on at the end.
That's cool. I'm here for you comparing to Buffalo to Alabama. I can live with that.
Buffalo is the Alabama of the MAC for sure this year.
That was sick. It was last live. That is a coach, honestly. That
he needs to be at a power five jobs.
Like whatever, if your job, like if you are a fan of a school and your job comes open, Lance Leipold is a better candidate than the guy you want. I promise you it is. Like this guy, all he does is win. Buffalo as a program hasn't won in the history of the school. Like just never. And he's put up, this would be his fourth straight 500 or better year. They're sending guys to the league. They're like, and he came from Division III where he dominated Division III like no one ever has. Like, I don't know what else you want him to do. Like, all he does is win.
I mean, yeah, he dominated at Wisconsin Whitewater. He's dominating in the MAC. How he's not at the top of any Big Ten coaching list this offseason would boggle my mind.
I'm telling you, man.
Who else? Hell, like if Matt Campbell leaves for Michigan, then Iowa State should hire him.
But you know what though? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Why wouldn't Michigan just consider him? I know that sounds crazy. Oh, Michigan go hire the guy from Buffalo. But
No, I think Michigan should.
That's the type of guy you like. He's going to win wherever he goes. Will he win a national championship? I don't know, but he'll win. I'm not saying he's a better candidate than Campbell, because I think Campbell would be a great candidate. But he's the type of guy that would go there and be really successful.
We got, let's see, walk-off field goal in Baylor, Kansas State. We had
stung my money line sprinkle, because Kansas State was in control of that game the whole time. Now it was like in a very funky Kansas State way that they managed to keep control. And that there was a lot of ugly kind of gross ball going on tonight.
Yes.
A lot of rain, a lot of nastiness, a lot of bad offense.
Georgia put up 45, but I don't really feel like it unleashed JT Daniels at all.
They did on the very first drive. And then they just ran the ball the rest of the game.
That was the game Kirby Smart wanted last week. Like, just going to hand this ball off. We're not going to throw it. We're not going to show you guys what we got here. They didn't have to throw it this week.
332 rushing yards, 7.2 yards per carry with 4 rushing touchdowns. Georgia just ran the old hand the ball off offense.
Does Vanderbilt owe Sarah Fuller an apology?
Why does Vanderbilt owe?
You're never even giving her a shot.
Does the offense owe Sarah Fuller? Yes,
that was incredible.
Is Vanderbilt's offense a chauvinist? I'm just asking the questions.
I think Barton made the point on Twitter. The thing that's a big bummer about the entire nation tuning into this game and being disappointed by Vanderbilt's offense is that Ken Seals has been kind of fun to watch this year, and Vanderbilt's offense put up 35 on Kentucky and like has gotten a little loose from time to time. They were dropping dimes on Florida's secondary just last week. And everyone was watching today to see if they could just get in field goal range, and Vanderbilt's offense couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's not as if Vanderbilt's offense has been good this year. It's just that Vanderbilt's offense
has been like
the best part right. of their team. You know, like the thing that you could be encouraged by. And today, they couldn't even get into field goal range. And I don't even think that they would have kicked it with her if they had gotten into field goal range. I think it would have been going for it on fourth down stuff. But they couldn't even – they didn't even get an option to try it. I think what was y'all's take on the Sarah Fuller stuff? Like, were you guys tuned into that? Were you excited about that?
I was excited. I was like sending messages to my niece, letting her know about it. And she was excited about it. And I thought it was cool. I thought it was great. But then also in the back of my mind, there's the thought that, wow, all it took for this to happen was a pandemic. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a great story, but at the same time, it's like, it's kind of sad that it took all of this just to get one woman a chance at a Power Five program to kick. And it's like, and I can't remember who it was, but there was a story on it. I think it was the Vanderbilt soccer coach, her coach at soccer, who said, well, let's be real. If we had a men's program, they wouldn't come to us.
I thought that it was one of those moments where, while all of college football can seem very big to us and sort of when we're in it, there's moments that I call like Today Show moments, or like, you know, Upworthy moments, where it's like, oh yeah, but this is going to get outside your normal college football circle. This is going to get outside the normal people that you follow. This is one of those moments that's going to be on Good Morning America, you know, and stuff like that. And I pretty quickly recognized, I was like, oh, okay, so this is one of those. So it's going to get like hammered really hard because they want to make sure they hit this other audience that normally would have zero interest in Vanderbilt, Missouri, much less like college football Saturday in general. And so when you've got those moments, like it's always good to remind yourself that like not everybody is you and is eating and breathing college football and the intricacies of the Vanderbilt personnel situation quite like you do. So I was okay that I was happy. I thought it was cool. And I was okay that it got, you know, really pushed hard, because I understand that I'm not the audience that they're trying to reach with that.
Right. I thought it was, I also thought it was cool. I got three daughters, you know, like that's, they are, they're not engaged enough to where I could really even show them what was going on. They were too crazy at the time, but you know, it's a feel good moment. It's like an example that certainly you can sort of show, little girls and set up as a, and something to be aspiring of. And yet, like, I thought it was really interesting because I'm in Nashville. I know a lot of Vanderbilt people, like people that played sports at Vanderbilt. And at least based on the people I talked to, there is very mixed reactions. Like,
it was not all immense pride.
It was not all immense pride. Okay. In fact, there was some like very, I would say even like borderline, like angry, upset reactions from like Vanderbilt people. And here's the thing. I think I sort of talked to people to try to like figure out exactly like where the emotions were coming from. And I think I get it, because when you are not invested in Vanderbilt, when you are purely a sidewalk observer of the game of college football, then there is this female kicking in the sport, and it's like, oh, that's cool. But if you're a Vanderbilt fan and Vanderbilt is the team that sort of a girl is kicking and they're getting beat 40-0. And, you know, why are we the program that is going to sort of bring a girl onto the field for this terrible team that's getting blasted? You know, Alabama isn't doing that. Like, it's always us. It's always us at Vanderbilt that's sort of just this cute little story and not a program that's actually taken serious for football. I think that was sort of the emotion that a lot of Vanderbilt's fans felt. Now, I don't want to speak for all of them. There's probably a lot of them that were also very prideful of the whole experience. And I'm sure that's true as well. But I did think it was interesting just that a lot of Vanderbilt people were like, man, come on. Like, let's just, do we not have a football team that we can just put out a football product and play competitive ball instead of, and I think they felt like it was a little bit of a PR.
It's got to be exasperating because, it's got to be exasperating because you've been dealing with number issues the entire season, right? We don't have a team.
Like, I get if you're angry that your team's getting beat 41-0, but you would have been beaten 41-0 with a guy kicker. It's like, why are you mad that it's a girl kicker?
I think because it's the feeling is that it's this novelty, and like that they don't want to be known as this novelty. They want to be known as a good football team. They want to be like what they've always been, cute, punchy little Vanderbilt that maybe they'll have a moral victory every once in a while, and this feels like another sort of moral victory. Forget that we just lost 40-0. A girl kicked a 35-yard, you know, kickoff.
I think I hope that's mostly just a result of the team and the program sucking that it was a woman kicking for them. I don't think anyone is
upset that they're that like I think everyone universally respects the girl, you know, herself. I just thought it's an interesting it's interesting the way people receive it. Given sort of their association with it and how, you know, where they stand relative to Vanderbilt.
There might be some delusion in terms of where Vanderbilt should be too.
Yeah. I just think that of all the things to be mad about, that just strikes me as weird.
Cause the, you know,
like if Illinois had a female kicker because they needed to, because in this season of all seasons, all this crap's going on and they got beat 41-0. I wouldn't be sitting there being mad. Like, what? We got to have the girl kicker people can watch us.
But I think the difference there is that Illinois has had like stretches of competitiveness. There's been times where like, I think part of the issue is that there's this feeling that the administration at Vanderbilt isn't actually supportive of the football program, but they'll get behind this sort of Twitter campaign of like, here's a sort of parade a girl out there on the field and be like, this is us, this is Vandy. When it's like, come on, like put some elbow grease behind actually supporting your football program, I think is sort of the,
I can get that, but yeah. I just think that this is, yeah. Okay. That's fine. I get it.
I just thought it was, I just, again, I'm not taking one side or the other. I just thought it was an interesting dichotomy of like the way people receive that experience.
Inspirational for me.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but it's just, I don't know. Seems kind of silly to me to be upset about that.
I mean, if Vanderbilt was better, they wouldn't have those feelings. Like, why is it always us?
That's what I'm saying. If Alabama like says, "Hey, look at," because Alabama's never had a good kicker. Alabama's kicker always sucks. But let's say Nick Saban finds a female soccer player at Alabama who's like a good kicker, and he's like, "Well, crap. Okay, I'm going to put her on the team." And Alabama's winning national titles and they have a female kicker. I mean, I'm sure there are going to be some Alabama fans who are like, "Oh, we got a girl kicker." But I just, I don't know. It's weird. I'd like to think that whoever's frustrated about it, it's like you said, it's mostly born of just frustration with the administration, not the idea of the
I think it is. I think that's team. I think that's kind of the point is that look, if Vanderbilt has had sort of proven itself proven that it's supportive of his program and generally, then I think people would give, a little bit more credence to the move. Anyways, that's the Vanderbilt hour. It does feel like that the Derek Mason era could be coming to an end though.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got no feel on what that would look like.
It'd be a weird offseason. I mean, I think that if Vandy does make that move, I don't think there's anybody that's going to argue against it. But I feel like of all the offseasons for Vandy to be on the market looking for a coach, I don't know if this is the right one.
I don't know that I agree with that, though, because if you think about it, I mean, what's the team going to look like next year, first of all? They've literally had like 27 transfers. So the team's going to be probably really bad next year. Even though they have a couple key like pieces coming back that are talented, the team generally is hard to really envision it being a really good team. And this is year 7. And I know it's pandemic year, but it is year 7 without a winning season yet. And so I wonder if you make a move now, you're probably the coach you want because no one else is chasing them. So I think it's a pretty interesting opportunity. I'm curious to see what happens.
Curious to see who they'd get.
Yeah, everyone's going to try to mention Dave Clawson just because of black and gold in private school, but Dave Clawson's about to beat Notre Dame here on December 12th.
Yeah, that's by the way, I'm happy that whoever pointed that out to us on Twitter, that Chip, while he gets a lot of crap for being a Gator hater, is actually just as much of a
I had no idea.
I hadn't
Chip, been paying you're picking to against either. Notre Dame every week, and they're calling you on it, man.
And you know what that means?
They're keeping score.
No, it means because like Chip's kind of playing it up when it comes to the Florida thing. Like he's steered into it. He's trying to rile it up. The Notre Dame hate, it's real. He's mad that they're in the ACC. He's got that. He's got his like his Argyle ascot on, and he's like, they ain't real ACC.
Chip's such a he's such a nice guy, but that dude leans into some hate now. He embraces the hate.
I've loved Notre Dame for the Notre Dame unders, and as soon as that offense got cooking, they really just burned me. I could no longer count on them for being ineffective with no explosive or splash plays. As soon as Ian Book started playing the best ball of his college career, I just had to jump on the other side of that one as fast as I could.
Early prediction I want to make, because it's like I talked about it in Slack a little bit today too. It's just, it struck me as we're watching the Iron Bowl, like Bo Nix is Ian Book, right? So like in 2 years, because Bo Nix is bad now, like Ian Book was bad a couple of years ago. So senior year, Bo Nix is going to have the Ian Book glow up. I'm calling it right now.
Just in time to save Gus Malzahn's job.
Yes.
Auburn's going to make it like an SEC title run and a playoff run in Bo Nix's senior year. He's going to go Cam Newton on it. And he's just going to carry that team. Gus is going to get a 7-year extension. Bo's going to leave, and then they're going to go 8-5.
Well, this Ian Book thing is blowing up the whole idea of the quarterback with the ceiling, because I know. Ian Book was the Jake Browning, right? It's just, mm-hmm. Oh, he starts as a freshman, and oh, look at this guy, he's good, and he's still just good. Oh, third year, oh, he's still just good, and fourth year, oh, he's just another good year, and all of a sudden, Ian Book, he an elite, but he's gone from good to, I don't know, really good, maybe great. So I don't know, man. You start to recalibrate things a little bit. Maybe Bo Nix does have a level up.
I think it can happen. And me picking Wake Forest against Notre Dame has nothing to do with Notre Dame hate. Everyone knows Wake Forest is a difficult out. they've played the toughest schedule in the ACC, and yet they are still sitting here as like a top half team. All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
I want to send a quick shout out to Mr. Hot as Fish Grease himself, UTSA. Who did they play today? They beat North Texas. So UTSA and Jeff Traylor's first season is now, where the hell is it? Yeah, they're 5-2. They're in first place in the Conference USA West Division.
One of those two losses was a money line sprinkled by me. So
against BYU,
they're 7-4 on the season. They're 5-2 in conference play. I'm not sure how Conference USA's tiebreakers and all that stuff is going to work because UAB only has one conference loss, but it's only played three games. But I'm just saying, UTSA might be playing in the Conference USA championship this year in Jeff Traylor's first season. So, and that's kudos to them.
And by the way, Texas A&M's defense was awesome tonight.
It was, but LSU's offense also sucks.
Yeah,
it did suck. But I'm just saying, like, they and yes, that was absolutely part of it. LSU was shuffling between two true freshman quarterbacks. Their offensive line looked overwhelmed. But LSU, A&M smelled some blood. And they were attacking, and that defensive line was really good. They're blitzing from everywhere. And yet it was sort of a wasted defensive performance because Kellen Mond was absolute trash. Mm-hmm. And the offense, I mean, Isaiah Spiller is pretty good in the run game here and there, but it definitely was actually.
They had one offensive touchdown.
Yeah, it felt like they had none.
Isaiah Spiller touchdown run in like the first quarter or early in the first half. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely like a mixed bag to take from that game. But
Florida wasn't much better against Kentucky. I mean, again, I mentioned at the top, like in terms of my notes of greatness from the day, Kyle Pitts returning to the game and having three touchdown grabs on five receptions. Dude's a monster.
Tom, are you a Heisman voter?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I'm not sure what you're allowed to tell me.
I cannot divulge my vote.
Okay, so let me just present this to you. Vote for Devontae Smith, number one. Vote for Kyle Pitts, number two. And then you can do whatever you want with the rest of them because those are the two best players in college football right now. All right. Don't be a sheep. Don't turn this into a quarterback award. Stick to your principles.
I'm not. Listen, I can't. I don't know who I'm voting for yet. I haven't decided. Devontae Smith is 1,000,000% in the running.
He's going to hold the Heisman Trophy over the field in the Big Body Benz in Atlanta, and he's just going to have a ladder match, and it's just going to be Mac Jones against Kyle Trask against Devontae Smith, and they're all going to fight for it on December 19th to see who gets the trophy.
All I'll say is that I have said many times that I believe a wide receiver will win the Heisman before another running back does, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. I just want to state for the record, my non-existent Heisman vote is going to Devontae Smith. Enthusiastically.
I will say, just for the sake of debate, I think Kyle Pitts is great. I think Kyle Pitts will be drafted before Kyle Trask, and I think he should be drafted before Kyle Trask. I think Kyle Pitts should definitely be a top 10 pick. But even in the games without Pitts, Trask put up some really, really, really good numbers, and Pitts did miss games. And I think that even in a season like this one where we have a small sample, that has to be taken into consideration.
I get that. I get that. In theory, though, had Kyle Trask missed a game and Emory Jones was throwing the ball around, I bet you Kyle Pitts still goes off.
I bet he does, too, because he wouldn't have to catch those paper planes.
Oh, man, you're going to get them Florida people riled up again. They just calmed down from last week.
Florida's going to be mad because we're arguing that they have two Heisman candidates.
That's right.
It's going to split votes.
What about Kadarius Toney? We should have three.
Not after today. No, not after today. He is Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the Cover 3 podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on YouTube, youtube.com/Cover3. And, of course, you can see the Cover 3 podcast in its entirety in the CBS Sports app on your OTT device. Go ahead and check it out. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
You.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.